Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 1, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Bhagwan, Lao Tse says on the character of Tao, Tao is a hollow vessel, and its use is inexhaustible, fathomless. And on the spirit of the valley, he says, the spirit of the valley never dies. It is called the mystic female. The door of the mystic female is the root of heaven and earth. Continuously, continuously, it seems to remain. Draw upon it, and it serves you with ease.
The world of Lao Tse is totally different from the worlds of philosophy, religion, ethics. It is not even a way of life. Lao Tse is not teaching something. He is that something. He is not a preacher. He is a presence. He has no doctrine for you. He has only himself to offer and share. Had he been a philosopher, things would have been easy. You could have understood him. He is a mystery because he is not a philosophy. He is not even the anti-philosophy because both depend on the logic. He is absurd. Philosophies depend on logic, anti-philosophies also depend on logic. So the anti-philosophies are also nothing but philosophies. Nagarjuna, a great anti-philosopher, but he is still a philosopher. He talks, he argues, he discusses in the same way as any philosopher. He discusses against philosophy, argues against philosophy, but the argument is the same. And logic is a whore. There is a story. Lao Tzu is one of the greatest disciples. Li Tazu reports it. Lao Tzu, Chuang Tzu, and Li Tazu. They are the three pillars of the world of Tao. Lao Tse goes on talking in epigrams, maxims. He does not even elaborate. But Li Tazu and Chuang Tse, they cannot argue being disciples of Lao Tse. They go on telling parables, stories, analogies. This word has to be continuously remembered. Tao cannot be explained. Only analogies can be given. Indications. It cannot be discussed, only it can be sowed. So a deep sympathetic heart is needed. It is not a question of the mind at all. Lita Zoo reports a story that in his town once it happened, the richest man of the town was crossing the river and the river was in flood. And there arose a great storm, and just in the midstream the boat upturned. Somehow the boatman escaped, but he couldn't save the rich man. The rich man was drowned. A great search was made. One fisherman found the body, dead body, but he asked a fantastic price for it, and he will not give it for less. And the family was not willing to give so much just for a dead body. So they went to a logician, a lawyer, a legal advisor, to ask what to do. Can something legally be done? The lawyer said, "You don't be worried. First give me my fee and then I will show you the way." So the lawyer took his fee and then he said, "Hold on. He cannot sell the dead body to anybody else. He will have to yield, because nobody will purchase that body. So you just hold on." 2-3 days passed. The family followed the advice. The fisherman became worried, because now the body was stinking. And he started feeling that it is better now to yield and accept whatsoever they give, because it has become a problem and nobody else can purchase. He also felt it. So how can you bargain? But before deciding anything, he also went to the legal advisor, the same man. He said, "First give me the fee and I will give you the advice." He took his fee and said, "Hold on. The family cannot purchase the body from anywhere else. They will have to yield. Logic is a whore, a prostitute. It belongs to nobody." So logic can be for philosophy and logic can be against philosophy. Lao Tse is not an anti-philosopher, because he is not a logician at all. Buddha is anti-philosophic. He argues against it. Nagarjuna is anti-philosophic. He argues against it. Not Lao Tse. He does not argue at all. He simply states. He is not after you to convince you. No, not Lao Tse. Everybody else seems to be in some way trying to convince you, but not Lao Tse. He simply states and does not bother whether you are convinced or not. But his seduction is great. He seduces. He persuades, not trying to convince. He convinces you deep down in the heart, and you cannot refute him because he gives no argument. That's the beauty and that's his power. He simply states a fact, and he is not seeking converts. And he is not ready to make you a follower. No. Even if you are ready, he will not accept. But he seduces. His seduction is very subtle and indirect. His seduction is non-aggressive. His seduction is feminine. There are two types of seductions. When a man seduces a woman, he is aggressive. He tries in every way, takes the initiative, makes a trap. Makes all the efforts that he can make. A woman seduces in a totally different way. She does not take the initiative. She does not make any trap. She does not go after the man. In fact, she pretends that she is not much interested. The man can fail, but the woman never fails. That is the feminine seduction. Her trap is very subtle. You cannot cut and get out of it. It has no loopholes. And without chasing you, she chases you. She haunts you in your dreams. Never knocks on your door, but haunts you in your dreams. Never shows any interest, but becomes the deepest of intensity in your being. That is the feminine trick. And Laozi is a great believer of the feminine mind. We will come across it. So remember, his world is not of logic, but analogy. Logic is apparent, direct. Either you have to be convinced or you have to convince the opponent. Either you have to follow it, become a follower, or you become the enemy. You have to choose. With logic, your mind has to be active. It is easy. Nothing is difficult about it. Everybody argues, more or less. Everybody is a logician. Good or bad, everybody is a philosopher. If you want to understand the law, say that old way won't help. You will have to put your logic aside. Because he is not chasing you as a logician. He is not arguing you. If you argue against him, it will be ridiculous, because he has not argued at all. He simply gives an analogy. What is analogy? For example, I have a certain experience that you don't have. Then how I am to describe it to you? The only way is an analogy. Some experience that you have, it is not exactly the same that I have, but some similarity exists. So I say that it is just like the experience you have, not exactly like it. Not exactly the same, but a small similarity exists. That small similarity understood will become the bridge. That's why those who have come to the ultimate ecstasy, they say it is like two lovers in deep embrace. It is like two lovers in deep orgasm. It is like when the sex act comes to a peak. This is analogy. They are not saying that it is this. No, nothing. They are not saying like that anything. They are simply saying that your experience has nothing else which can become a bridge. Jesus says, God is love. This is an analogy. In your life, the highest is love. In God's being, the lowest is love. The lowest of the divine and the highest of the human meet. That is the boundary. The highest that humanity can reach is love. It is the lowest for the divine, just the feet of the divine. But from there, if feet are found, you can find the whole God. That's why Jesus says, love is God. Not that love is God, but in your experience, nothing else exists through which an analogy can be made. So don't take love, say, verbally and literally. These are all analogies. If he says the spirit of the valley, this is an analogy. He's saying something. Not exactly the valley, because the valley you know. Through the valley, he's giving you a feeling of something that you don't know. That you know, from that, he is bringing you to that which you don't know. Analogy means a reference to the known for the unknown. When he says the valley of the spirit, he means many things. An analogy is always very pregnant. Logic is always narrow. Analogy wide, infinite. The more you search in it, the more you can find through it. A logic is adjustable, analogy never. That's why books like Tao Te King or Bhagavad Gita or Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, you can go on reading and reading and reading. They are inexhaustible. You can go on finding more and more. Because they are analogies. The more you grow, the more you can see in them. The more you can see in them, the more you grow. The more you grow, the more you can see again. So these books are not books. They have a life of their own. They are alive phenomena. And you cannot read them once and be finished with them. No, that is not the way. A logical book can be read once and be finished, understood. You can throw it in the rubbish. But a book of analogy is a poetry. It changes with your moods. It changes with your insight. It changes with your growth. It gives you different visions in your different states of mind. The analogy remains the same. For example, love is God. A man who has never known anything except sex and who has thought that sex is love. In the West it is happening too much. Now for the sexual act, they say love making. This love-making or making love is absolutely foolish. You cannot make love. Love is not an act. Sex is an act. Love is not an act. It is a state of being. You can be in it, but you cannot make it. You fall in it. It is not an effort. Sex can be made, not love. A prostitute can give you sex, not love, because how can you make love on order for money? Impossible. How can you make love for money? It comes on its own. It has its own mysterious ways. You cannot control it. You can only be controlled by it. You cannot possess it. You can only be possessed by it. Sex can be done, not love. You can make sex, but you cannot make love. You can only be in love. So a man who has thought, or a woman, that sex is love and sexual act is the act of love, when Jesus says love is God will's thing, and of course there is no other way for him to think, because this is his analogy, that sex is God. In Sweden they are making a film now on the love life of Jesus, because they think that a man who says love is God must mean that sex is God. And this film is going to be one of the most profanest of acts, unholiest possible. Because in the film they are trying to depict Jesus making love in the air sense, moving into sexual acts. Now no country is ready for them to allow to make the film. But they will make. It is difficult now to stop them. Love life of Jesus to them means just sex life. You understand an analogy from your standpoint. The analogy can give you only that much that you can put into it. A man who has loved not only sexually but totally. Because sex is a local phenomenon, physical, nothing wrong in it, but it is not total. When it becomes total, and you love a person in totalness, not only sexually, the attraction is not only physical, but spiritual also, not only bodily. Not that the body is denied in it, but the attraction is greater, and bodily attraction is just a smaller circle in it. Then you will understand love is God in a different way. The analogy will become deeper for you. But if you have known love which is beyond sex, in which sex simply disappears, the whole sexual energy is transformed into ecstasy. If you have known that love, God will have a different meaning to you. So analogy depends on you. And a book of analogy like Lao says has to be read again and again. It is a life work. You cannot simply read it in a paperback and throw it. It is a treasure to be carried. It is a lifelong work. It is a lifelong discipline to enter the analogy. Logic is superficial. You can understand Aristotle, there is nothing much. But when you come to Lao Tse, for the first time you may even miss that there is something. But by and by, Laozi will haunt you. His attraction is feminine. By and by, he will catch hold of your being. You have only to allow him. In logic, you have to fight. In analogy, you have to be sympathetic. You have to allow it. Only then the analogy can flower. So in deep sympathy and reverence, in deep faith and trust, only Laozi can be understood. There is no other way. If you come to Laozi through your mind, you will never come to him. You will go round and round and round. You will never touch his being. Come to him as the heart. Analogy is for the heart. Logic is for the mind. Laozi is more a poet. Remember that. You don't argue with a poet. You listen to the poetry. You absorb the poetry. You chew it. You let it move inside your being. Let it become a part of your blood and bones. You digest it. You forget the words. You forget the poetry completely. But the fragrance becomes part of you. You may not remember what that poet was singing, but the song has been retained. The flavor of it, the fragrance, the significance has entered you. You have become pregnant. Laozi can be understood only if you become pregnant with him. Allow him, open the doors. He will not even knock because he is not aggressive. He will not try to argue because he does not believe in argument. He is not a mind being at all. He is absolutely a heart being. He is simple. His analogies are that of a villager, but alive. Radiant, vital. If you allow him, suddenly you will be transformed. Just a understanding, a heart understanding, and you will be transformed by him. Second thing to remember, that Laozi is not a religious man in the ordinary sense. He is not a theologian. He is not a religious man at all, the way you understand the word. He has never gone to the temple, never worshipped. Because he found that the whole existence is the temple, and the whole life is the worship. He is not a fragmentary being. He does not divide life. He lives it as an undivided river. You divide 1 hour for the temple every week. You go to the church. Sunday is the religious day. And religion becomes by and by a Sunday affair. The 6 working days are not touched by it. You are very cunning. Sunday the holiday. Sunday the religious day. When you are not working, you can be honest easily. When you are not working, you can be honest easily. When you are not in the shop, you can be honest easily. When you are resting in the sun, you can be honest easily. When you are listening to the sermon in the church, there is nothing. No problem. The 6 working days, they create the real problem. You cannot be religious then. So this is the trick. This Sunday is the trick to avoid religion. You have made airtight compartments in your life. Religion has its own place on the Sunday. And then you are free for 6 days to be as irreligious as possible. Hindus have their own ways, Mohammedans their own, Christians their own. How to avoid religion? And these people you call religious, they are the avoiders. They go in the temple and they pray. When they pray, look at them, at their faces. They look so beautiful. And when they come out of the church or the temple, they are no more the same. They are different. Tolstoy has written a small story. Not a story really, it is a fact, it happened, an incident. Lhasa went one day, Tolstoy went one day into the church early in the morning. And he was surprised, it was dark. And he found that the richest man of the town is praying and confessing before God and saying that I am a sinner. Of course, Tolstoy became interested. And he was relating his sins, that how he has deceived his wife and has been unfaithful, and how he had been in love relationships and affairs with other women, others' wives. Tolstoy became intrigued. He came nearer and nearer. And he was relating with much gusto, confessing to God that I am a sinner, and unless you forgive me, there is no way for me. And how I have been exploiting, and how I have been robbing people. And I am a sinner, and I don't know how to change myself unless your grace descends. There is no possibility for me. And tears are flowing. Then suddenly he became aware that there is somebody else. He looked. He recognized by this time the day was dawning, and he became very angry, and he told to Tolstoy that, remember, these things I have said to God, not to you. And if you say these things to anybody, I will drag you in the court, defaming me. So, remember that you have never heard these things. This was a personal dialogue between me and God, and I was not aware that you are here. A different face before the God, and totally different face before the world. Religion is a compartment, airtight. This is a trick how to avoid it. This is a way how to be religious without being religious at all. A deception. Lhasa is not religious in that way at all. He is a simple man. He is not even aware that he is religious. How can a religious man be aware that he is religious? Religion is like breathing to him. You become aware of breathing only when something goes wrong. When it is hard to breathe. When you have asthma. Or some other type of breathing trouble. Otherwise you never know, never become aware that you breathe. You simply breathe, it is so natural. Laozi is naturally religious. He is not even aware. He is not like your saints who are practicing religion. No, he doesn't practice. He has allowed the total to take possession. He lives it, but he does not practice it. Religion is not a discipline for him. It is a deep understanding. It is not something imposed from the outside. It is something that flows from within. There is not a bit of distance between him and religion. He is not religious in the sense that you understand. He is not a saint. Because he has never practiced the saintliness. He has not forced it. It is not his character. Real religious man has no religious character, cannot have it, because character is a device of the irreligious. Try to understand it. You develop a character because you are afraid of your being. You develop morality because you are afraid of inner immorality. You force yourself in a certain way of life because you know if you live spontaneously and naturally, you will become a sinner, not a saint. You are afraid of your being. You impose a character all around you. Character is an armor. It protects you from others and it protects you from yourself. It is a citadel. You move in it. You speak truth, not because you have come to know the bliss of it. You speak truth because you have been taught that if you don't speak, you will be thrown into hell. Your theologians have tried to picture your God as the greatest sadist possible, throwing people in hell, in burning fire, in boiling oil. This God seems to be a sadist. He needs a great psychological treatment. Seems to be the greatest torturer. You are afraid of the hell. And you are ambitious for the heaven. The carrot of heaven hanging in front of you continuously. Your character is just a device between heaven and hell, a protection against hell, and an effort to achieve the ambition, the heaven. How can you be religious if you are so afraid and so ambitious? A religious man is not ambitious at all. Ambition is the first thing that drops from a religious man. Because ambition means to be in the future. A religious man is always here and now. He exists in the present. He has no future to bother. And he is not in any way afraid. Because he lives so totally, how he can be afraid? The fear comes because you live fragmentarily. You have not lived at all. That's why the fear. Just try to understand the point. A man is afraid of death. Why? Do you know that death is bad? How can you know unless you die? Do you know death is going to be worse than life? How can you know? It may be better than life. Why you are afraid of death without knowing? How one can be afraid of the unknown? That seems to be impossible. You can be afraid only of the known. How can you be afraid of the unknown, unfamiliar, that you don't know at all? No, you are not afraid of death. You have wrongly placed your fear in death. You are really afraid of death because you have not been able to live. The fear is concerned with the unlived life. You are afraid that you have not been able to live love, and death is coming near, which will finish. You will be no more, and you have not been able to love. You are like a tree which has not flowers, and the woodcutter is coming. The tree feels afraid, not knowing what is going to happen. The fear is not coming from that. The fear is coming from something which has not happened. The tree knows well that the fruits have not come, the flowers have not come, I have not bloomed. The tree has not known the spring yet. It has not danced with the winds. It has not loved. It has not lived. This unlived life creates fear, and the woodcutter is coming. And the woodcutter will come, and there will be no future. Death means no future. Past is gone, and no future. And present is so narrow. Fear takes you over, you tremble. Fear is always of the unlived. If you live totally, you are unafraid of anything. If death comes to me right now, I am ready. I have lived. Everything is complete. Nothing is incomplete. Death cannot destroy. If something is incomplete, then I would like death to wait a little. But everything is complete. I have taken the bath this morning. I have talked to you. Whatsoever was to happen has happened. I am completely ready. Death comes, I am ready. I will not even look once back, because there is nothing to look. Everything complete. Whenever anything is complete, you are free of it. A life really lived, one becomes free of it. A life not lived, you can never be free of it. You can go to the caves, to the Himalayas, to Tibet, you can move. You will never be free. And fear will always be there. Fear and freedom cannot exist together. When freedom comes, and freedom comes only when you have lived, bloomed, everything complete and finished, then for what you hanker to live more? Not even a single moment is needed. Then fear disappears. Your religion is based on fear. It is not, in fact, religion. It is pseudo. It is false. It is just a deception. Lao Tse is not religious in this sense that you are religious or you feel other people are religious. Lao Tse is religious in a totally different way. His quality is different. He is simple, lives innocently moment to moment. He does not talk about God also. Because what is the use? God is not a word. How can you talk about Him? He lives Him. He does not talk about Him. He enjoys Him, you see, celebrates Him. It is not a cerebral phenomena. He dances. He drinks Him. He lives Him. So what is the point of talking about Him? This is my observation, that people always talk about things which they don't know. There is a Sufi story. A great king used to come to a fakir, a mystic beggar. But he was surprised, because whenever he will come, the mystic will talk about money, kingdom, politics. And he was there to talk about God, meditation, religion. So one day he said that, "Forgive me, but this I cannot understand. I have come here to talk about God, religion, meditation, samadhi. And this is ridiculous, that I, a man of the world, come to talk about samadhi, enlightenment, and you, a religious man, supposed religious, because I have become suspicious. You always, whenever I come, you talk about the kingdom and the politics and the money and thousands of things, but always of the world. How do you explain it?" The fakir laughed. He said, "There is nothing to explain. It is simple. You talk about things you don't know. I talk about things I don't know. It is simple." "Why should I talk about God? I know. Why should you talk about kingdom? You are a king. You know." Laozi doesn't talk about God. Not even mentions, not even once. Has he forgotten Him? Is he against Him? No. He lives Him so totally that even to remember will be a sacrilege. To talk about God will be talking about such a deep phenomena. It will be a betrayal. It will be a betrayal, I say to you, to talk about God. It is such an intimate phenomena. It is between Him and the whole. It is just like lovers don't like to talk about their love. And people who talk about their love, you can be certain they have no love life. Love is such an intimate phenomena, nobody wants to talk about it. Poets talk about it because they don't know. They go on writing poems. That is their fantasy. But they have not known. Lovers keep quiet. Lovers don't talk about love at all. There is nothing to talk. They know it. And by knowing it, they know also that it cannot be talked about. It will be a betrayal. Laozi is religious in a totally different way. Now, try to enter this sutra with me. Tao is a hollow vessel, and its use is inexhaustible, fathomless. Hollowness is one of the key words in Laozi. He talks about hollowness again and again. Hollowness means space. Hollowness means vastness. Hollowness means inexhaustibleness. You live in a house, but your concept of the house is the walls. Lao's concept of the house is the space within, not the walls. He says walls are not the house. How can you live in the walls? You live in the emptiness, not in the walls. The hollowness, that is the real house. But when you think about house, you think about the structure that is around the hollowness. That's why a palace and a hut look different to you, not for Laos, because the hollowness is the same. If you look at the walls, then of course a hut is a hut and a palace is a palace. But if you look at the innermost hollowness, which is the real house, because only hollowness can house you, not the walls, then there is no difference between a hut and a palace. There is no rich hollowness and no poor hollowness. All hollownesses are the same. They are equal. There are rich walls and poor walls. Once you understand this, then many things will become possible, because this is an analogy with infinite potentiality and meaning. When you look at a person, do you look at the body? Then you are looking at the walls. That is not the real man. The real man is the inner hollowness. A body can be beautiful, ugly, ill, healthy, young, old, but the inner hollowness always is the same. Then you don't look at the bodies, then you look at the hollowness within. Everywhere Laos finds the analogy. You go to the market to purchase an earthen pot or a golden pot. The golden pot differs from the earthen pot, just the wall differs, but the inner hollowness is the same. And when a poor man goes to the well and a rich man goes to the well, the rich man with a golden pot and the poor man with an earthen pot, they go with the same hollownesses. They carry the same water and they fill their pots. When they fill their pots, not the walls are used, but the inner hollowness, the inner emptiness. Lao Tzu says, look at the inner, don't look at the outer. And the inner hollowness is your being. The inner hollowness, the inner emptiness is your being. That means your being is a non-being. Because the word being gives you a feeling that something is there inside. No, there is nobody inside. All somebodyness is on the outside. Inside is nobodyness, hollow. All ego is just on the surface. Inside is egolessness. Who is there inside? Once you know, you will laugh. You will say that the question is irrelevant. There is nobody. exactly nothingness. That's why you are vast. That's why you are of the quality of Brahma. That's why you cannot find God anywhere, because He is the hollowness of the whole. And you go on looking for the body. Somebody is looking for Krishna, somebody is seeking Christ, somebody is seeking Mahavir, all looking for bodies. Nobody in search of the hollowness. Otherwise, where you need to go? The space surrounds you from everywhere. This is God. The space in which you are born, the space in which you live, the space in which you will dissolve. A fish is born in the sea. The fish lives in the sea. The fish dies and dissolves in the sea. The fish is nothing but sea water. Exactly the same. You are. The hollowness is all around, and the same hollowness is within. How can there be two types of hollownesses? Impossible. Emptiness is always the same. In a sinner exists the same hollowness as in a saint. The sinner has a label on the outside of being a sinner, and the saint has a label of being a saint on the outside. You are attached too much to the walls. You don't see that walls are not meaningful. Why you call a man a saint? Because he does something which you call good. Why you call a man a sinner? Because he does something you call bad. But all doing is on the outside. All actions are on the outside. They are just paintings on the walls. But the inner hollowness, can the inner hollowness become impure by your acts? Can you make emptiness impure? Can you make emptiness pure? Emptiness is simply emptiness. How can you make it pure or impure? Emptiness remains untouched. If you cut me by a sword, you cut my body but not me. Because me means the inner emptiness. If I do something, I do with the walls. But the inner emptiness is a non-doer. Remember this analogy. It is a key word in Laozi. Tao is hollow vessel. And its use is inexhaustible, fathomless. If Tao, our God, was not empty, then the use cannot be inexhaustible. Then someday it will exhaust. And what God is called to be a God who is exhaustible. One day the God will be dead. It will exhaust. But the concept of God in your minds has been created as if He is a person sitting somewhere in the skies and controlling. He is not controlling. He is not a person. In fact, He is not a He. and he is not a sea also. All our words are irrelevant because it is a vast hollowness, vast space, emptiness. Your logic will immediately arise in the mind. Then how things are there? Ask the physicists. Now they have come to the same understanding as Lao Tse. Now they say that as we enter deeper and deeper into matter, matter disappears. Finally it has disappeared completely. Now we don't know. Inside it is a hollowness. They were searching the substance of matter. They search hard. Now it has escaped completely out of vision. They cannot see where it has gone. They search it first in the molecules, then they went deeper into the atoms, then they divided the atom and went deeper into electrons. Now the matter has completely disappeared in nothingness. Matter is hollow. Even these walls of stone are hollow. That's why Hindus call the world of matter illusion. It looks that it is very solid and substantial, and inside everything is hollow. Whenever you will be silent, sitting with closed eyes watching inside, you will feel a hollowness. Don't get scared. Physicists were chasing matter and they came to hollowness. And the people who have been really seekers of a spiritual dimension, they have also come to the hollowness. Then you become scared. Because maybe the matter is hollow, doesn't matter. But you are also hollow, a hollow bamboo. Inside nothing but emptiness. You become afraid. If you become afraid, you will cling to the wall. And in final analysis, the wall is also hollow. This existence is a vast emptiness, and that's the beauty of it. In the night you go to sleep, dreams arise out of nothing. Beautiful dreams, ugly dreams, nightmares, which scare you to death. Dreams arise out of nothing. And they look so real. They look so authentically real. And when your eyes open in the morning, you cannot find them anywhere. From where they came, from where they arose, and now where they have gone. You never think about the phenomena of the dream. If it can happen in the night, why not in the day? One of the disciples of Lao Tse, Chuang Tzu, one night dreamt that he has become a butterfly, fluttering, flying amidst flowers. And next morning, when he awoke, he was very sad. His disciples asked, "What is the matter, Master? We have never seen you so sad. What has happened?" He said, "I am in such a quandary. I am in such a dilemma that it seems now it cannot be solved." The disciples said, "We have never seen any problem that you cannot solve. Just say, what is the problem?" Chantazu says, last night I dreamt that I had become a butterfly, flying in the garden, moving from one flower to another flower. The disciples laughed. They said, this is the dream, master. Chantazu says, wait, let me tell you the whole story. Now I am awake and I am puzzled. A doubt has arisen. If Chantazu can dream that he can become a butterfly, why not the otherwise? A butterfly can dream that she has become a Chantazu. Now who is who? Am I a butterfly dreaming that I have become a Chantazu? Because if it can happen that you can become a butterfly in the dream, then what is the problem? A butterfly is sleeping there this morning, resting, maybe dreaming that she is you. And how do you know who you are? If Chantazu can become a butterfly, why not a butterfly can become a Chantazu? There seems to be no impossibility about it. Night dreams come out of nothingness and they look real. In the day, dreams come out of nothingness and they look real. The only difference between the night and the day is one. Night dream is private and the day dream is public. That is the only difference. In night dream, you cannot invite your friends to be there. It is private. In the daydream, you can invite friends. It is public. The house in which you live in the day is public. If there is a possibility of private dreaming, there is a possibility of public dreaming. We are here. If we all go to sleep, there will be as many dreams as there are people here. Private. Nobody's dream will enter into anybody's dream. They will not clash with anybody. And everybody will forget about anybody else. He will live in his dream and in his own dream reality. Then you are awake, you look at me, and I am talking to you. This is a public dream. You all are dreaming together. That's the only difference. There is a possibility of a greater awakening when you awake out of the public dream also. That is what enlightenment is. Then suddenly the whole world is Maya. This is what Lhasa is saying. Tao is a hollow vessel and its use is inexhaustible, fathomless. It is a vast emptiness and everything arises out of it and goes back to it, falls back into it. And it is inexhaustible because it has no limits. You may not be aware that the concept of zero was heard in India. Because India became aware that everything comes out of nothingness, zero, and everything falls back into nothingness to zero. The whole journey is from zero to zero. So India coined the concept of zero, sunyam. And that is the base of whole mathematics. Zero is the base of whole mathematics. If zero is taken away, the whole structure of mathematics falls down. with zero the whole game. You add 1 0 to the figure 1. The value of the 0 is 9 there, because immediately 1 becomes 10. 9 is born out of 0 immediately. You add 2 zeros to 1. The value is 99. Immediately 1 has become 100. Out of 0, the whole structure goes up. Without 0, mathematics disappears. And without mathematics, whole science disappears. So if you ask me, 0 is the root of all mathematics and of all science. You cannot conceive Einstein without the concept of a 0. No, it is not possible. All computers will stop immediately if you drop the concept of 0. Because without the 0 they cannot work. 0 seems to be the most substantial thing in the world. And what a 0 is? A 0 is simply 0, nothing. It is inexhaustible. You can take as many things out of it as you want. 9, it can become. 99, it can become. 999, it can become. Go on, and it can become anything you like. It is bottomless, fathomless. You cannot fathom it. 1 is limited. It has a limitation. It has a fixed value to it. 2 is limited. All the 9 digits are limited. Only the 0 is an unlimited phenomena. In fact, the 9 digits cannot work without it. They come out of it. They grow out of it. This whole existence comes out of 0, a hollowness. Why this emphasis on hollowness? It is not a philosophical doctrine, remember. It is simply an analogy. Lao Tse is trying to show you something. He is trying to show you that unless you become hollow, you will suffer. Because hollowness is your reality. With unreality, you will suffer. And that is the meaning of meditation, to become hollow, to be empty inside. Not even a thought flutters. No content. Just a space. Suddenly, all misery has disappeared, because misery exists in thoughts. Death has disappeared, because death exists in thoughts. Past has disappeared, because the whole burden is carried through thoughts. Ambition disappears, because how can you be ambitious without thoughts? How can you be mad without thoughts? Have you ever seen a madman who has no thoughts? In fact, a madman is a madman because he has too many thoughts and he cannot hold them together. A whole crowd, too much to bear. A madman is a great thinker, that is his trouble. He thinks too much. And he thinks in many dimensions together. In his cart, in all the directions, horses are harnessed. And he goes on in all directions. And he cannot stop because he is not He is so divided, so fragmentary, that he is not. Only a hollowness can be undivided. Can you divide a hollowness? Everything can be divided. Anything that is substantial can be divided. Self can be divided. Only no self cannot be divided. That's why when Buddha reached to his ultimate enlightenment, he coined a word that was his invention. The word anatta. It never existed before him. Anatta means no self. Anatta means anatma. Anatta means you are not. Anatta means not is. You are not. Anatta means nothingness, a hollowness. The analogy is to indicate certain things. Become hollow. Be hollow. But the whole teaching, conditioning of the society is just against it. In the West they say that if you are empty, you will become a devil's workshop. An empty mind is a devil's workshop. This is foolishness. Extreme foolishness. Because an empty mind can never be devil's workshop. If it is really empty, suddenly only God is there and nothing else, because God is hollow. Devil is full of thoughts. He is never empty. Devil has a mind, God has no mind. You can become a devil's workshop. The more you think, the more you can become. If you don't think at all, how can you become a devil's workshop? Devil cannot enter in a hollowness. He will be afraid of death, because to enter into emptiness is to die. He can enter in you only if there are many thoughts. Then he can hide in the crowd. Then he can also become a thought in you. An empty mind is God's mind. It is no mind. Become hollow. Sit as a hollow bamboo. Move as a hollowness. Live as an hollowness. Do whatsoever you have to do, but do it as if you are inside hollow. Then karmas will not touch you at all. Then your actions will not become a burden to you. Then you will not be entangled, because a hollowness cannot be entangled. The spirit of the valley never dies. The spirit of the valley is the spirit of hollowness. What is a valley? It is a hollow thing. Go to the hills. You will find two things: peaks full of rocks, filled, and valleys empty. The spirit of the valley is the spirit of emptiness. Peaks come and go, valley remains. You cannot destroy nothingness. Something can always be destroyed. If you are something, you will have to be born and die again and again. If you are nothing, then how you can be destroyed? How you can be created? You simply disappear out of the world of the forms to the formless. A valley means the world of the formless. The spirit of the valley never dies. It is called the mystic female. These are all analogies. A woman is a valley. A man is a peak. A man enters the woman. The woman simply allows. A woman is a receptivity. A man is an aggression. A man tries to do. A woman simply waits for things to happen. It is called the mystic female. This word has to be understood. The mystic female. Because for Laozi, that is the ultimate. Laozi feels that the nature of existence is more like a woman than like a man. Because man comes out of woman. Woman comes out of woman. Man can be discarded even. But woman cannot be discarded. Woman seems to be a basic element. Man is a growth out of it. Woman seems to be more elemental, more natural. Man has something unnatural about him. If you ask the biologists, they say that man has a deep imbalance in his biology. Woman is symmetrical, balanced. That's why she looks more beautiful and round. Man has corners. Woman has no corners. A woman is a more balanced phenomena. That's why she never tries to invent something, to create something, to do something, to be on the go. No, she is never. Man is always on the go. He has to do something to prove that he is. He cannot simply accept himself. He cannot simply be and enjoy. He has to go to the moon, and he has to go to the Everest, and he has to do something. A deep imbalance is there. He cannot simply sit and be. He becomes an adventurer, a scientist. A woman simply enjoys being. She is happy with small things. She does not hanker for the moon. And every woman thinks, what foolishness it is. Why you are going to the moon? You ask the wives of the astronauts. They simply cannot believe why. Why move in danger and death unnecessarily? What is wrong being here? Man is a vagabond, a gypsy. If the world is left to man, there will be no houses, only tents, at the most. And he will be moving, and moving from one place to another. He cannot stay in one place. Something deep inside him forces him to move. He is not balanced. The imbalance is his madness. Look at a woman, she is balanced. Her needs are small. Somebody to love, somebody to be loved, food, shelter, a little warmth around, a home, finished. Then she is not worried about anything. No woman has created any science no woman has founded any religion. People come to me and they ask why. All religions were created by man because man is tense. He has to do something or other. If he becomes frustrated with this world, he starts doing something with the other world. But he has to do. He is never here and now. He cannot be here and now. A Laozi has this analogy that the nature of existence is more feminine. It is more balanced. Look at the trees. Look at the birds singing. Look at the rivers flowing. Look all around and watch. You will find more feminineness everywhere. Everything seems to be perfect at this moment. The trees are not worried about the future. The words are not worried about the future. The rivers are simply moving so lazily, so silently, as if not moving at all. Nothing seems to be in a hurry. That's why it happens every day. The man is honking the horn on the street, and the woman goes on saying from the window, "I am coming, just wait a minute." A woman has no time sense. They have watches, but they are ornamental. They are not watches really. They don't have time sense because they are not in a hurry. Time sense arises out of hurry and haste. Everything is trembling and everything is at stake, as if 1 minute late and everything will be lost. And if you ask the man, "Where are you going?" he will shrug his shoulders. He will just do the picture, but honking the horn, as if something great, a life experience, is going to be missed. And the woman goes on saying, "I have even heard one woman once. I was sitting with the husband in the car. And really, we were getting late. And the husband was very much worried. In fact, he did not be in a worry. He should not have been in a worry. Because it was my appointment, not his. I was getting late. But he was honking and he was much worried and perspiring and swearing at the wife. And the wife, 2-3 times, she said, "I am coming." But her makeup was not complete. It is never complete. She always comes somehow, but it is incomplete. Much could have been done. She is so at ease with the mirror, with herself. She is so at ease. That is her world. That the wife got angry and she looked down from the window and said, "I have told you 1,000 times that I am coming in a minute." 1,000 times. You cannot even tell 1,000 times in 1 minute, and I am coming in a 1 minute. No time sense. The world moves without any time sense. Clocks and watches don't exist with trees and rivers and mountains. A timeless world. Men exist with time, with a worry. Deep down, the worry seems to be sexual. The worry of achieving a sexual orgasm. Whenever a man is making love to a woman, he is worried. Worried whether he will be able to make it or not. Worried whether he will be able to satisfy the woman or not. Worried whether he will be able to prove that he is the man or not. the worry, an inner trembling, and in a hurry somehow to prove. And that's why he misses. Ejaculation is there, but orgasm, no. Orgasm is a different phenomenon. It happens only when you are not worried. It happens only when you are not an achiever. It happens only when you are not reaching for something. It happens in a deep relaxation. It happens only when you are not in control. But nature takes control. Then your whole body throbs with an unknown bliss. Then every cell of your body celebrates in a total ecstasy. It is divine then. But man is worried. And that sexual worry is the root cause of all worries. Then everywhere he is trying to prove himself. There is no need to prove yourself. You are perfect. No woman is worried to prove. She takes it for granted that she is perfect. She lives in a very relaxed way. Many husbands come to me and always their complaint is that their wives are lazy. They are not lazy. They are enjoying. Whatsoever is the case, they are not in a hurry. Comparatively, they look lazy. Lao Tzu says the nature of the existence is more like the female, more feminine, and the analogy is beautiful. He is not saying that existence is female. Remember this. This is not a logic. He is not trying to prove that existence is female. He is not for the live movement. No. He is giving simply an analogy. A man can also be feminine. A Buddha is feminine. A Lao Tzu is feminine. A Jesus is feminine. Then he lives. He lives in the moment unhurried. He enjoys the moment unhurried. Jesus says to his disciples, look at the lilies in the field. How beautiful they are. Even Solomon was not so beautiful in all his glory. But what is the secret of the lilies? They are just here and now flowering. What will happen next moment is not a worry. The next moment has not entered in their consciousness yet. A man can live a feminine existence, then he becomes a mystic. That is the only way. So all mystics become in a certain way feminine. And they are the real religious men, not the founders of religion. Remember, this is a difference. Buddha is not the founder of Buddhism, no. His disciples are the founders. Jesus is not the founder of Christianity, no. His apostles, they are the founders. Mahavir is not the founder of Jainism. Gautam, his disciple, who is a scholar and great pundit. These are the men. Jesus himself is feminine. To show this, in India, we have never painted avatars, Tirthankaras, Buddhas with beards and mustaches, no. Just to show this, that they are feminine. Have you ever seen Ram with a mustache? Krishna with beard? Not that they were somehow lacking in hormones. They were not the third sex. They were men. beards existed. But this is just an analogy. We have dropped the beards to show that they have become feminine. The feminine mystic has come into being. They existed without any hurry. They existed not as a tense man, but a non-tense woman. And you can feel around them the feminine warmth, the roundness of a Buddha. The spirit of the valley never dies. It is called the mystic female. The door of the mystic female is the root of heaven and earth. The door of the mystic female is the root of heaven and earth. And if you can find the key how to open the mystic door of female, you have opened the door of existence. Everybody has to enter that door, non-tense, balanced, satisfied, content. That's the secret of feminine being. When I am saying this, there are two possibilities of misunderstanding. Women can misunderstand that they have nothing to do. Men can misunderstand that then this law says not for us. No, it is for you both. But remember, women are not pure women. They have lost the feminine mystic themselves. They have to gain it again. It will be easier for them, of course, to gain it than men, because man has gone farther away. And don't think that if you are a man, Lao Tse is not for you. He is particularly for you. Otherwise, you will go farther and farther away from existence and life's ecstasy. Everybody has come back to the mother. That is the feminine mystic. You are born out of the mother's womb. You have to find the womb again in existence. If you can find the womb again in existence, the same warmth, the same life, the same love, the same care into existence, then existence becomes your home, your mother. Hindus are better when they call their god mother, Mother Kali, then Christians and Mohammedans and Jews, they go on calling their god father. Those three religions are man-oriented. That's why they have been so violent, Mohammedans and Christians. They have killed so many. They have been a catastrophe on the earth. They have been murderers. In the name of religion, they have been only killing and doing nothing else. Man-oriented religion. Buddhism has not killed. Jainism has not killed. Hinduism has not killed anybody. Because they are more and more inclined towards the feminine mystic. And you cannot complain against Lao Tse at all. There exists no organized religion. Because once a religion becomes organized, violence enters into it. Organization is going to be violent. It has to fight its way. It is bound to become man. Organization is male. Religion is female. I have heard an anecdote that few disciples of devil came very much worried and said and told him that, why are you sitting here? Our whole business is at stake. A man has again become a Buddha, enlightened. We have to do something. Otherwise, He will transform people and our world will be deserted. And who will come to hell? Do something immediately. There is no time should be lost. One man has again become a Buddha. The devil said, you don't worry. I work through the disciples. I have sent already. The disciples are on the way. They will surround him. They will create an organization. And no need to worry. The organization will do everything that we cannot do. And they always do better. I have learned it through the history. I will create a church. And I will not be involved in it at all. In fact, they do it on their own. I just simply encourage and help. Once the Pope is there, Christ is forgotten. Once the church is there, the Buddha is killed and murdered. It is always on the corpse of a Buddha that a religion stands. These are analogies. Women can attain to their feminine mystique easily. That is the reason. More women become attracted towards religion. They don't create religion, but more women. Almost four times more than men become interested in religion. In Mahavira's disciples, 40,000 are women, 10,000 men. And the same proportion in Buddha's disciples. And go to any church and any temple and just count. You will always find four women to one man. And that one may have come just because the wife has come. He may not be really there. Women can become more easily attuned. They are mothers. They are nearer nature. Men will find a little difficulty to come back. He has involvements, commitments, investments into his anxiety, tension. Even if he comes, he will create anxiety around religion. This is my everyday observation. Women come. If they surrender totally. If they meditate, at all they meditate totally. Then simply they start growing. Men come to me, if they surrender, they cannot surrender totally. A part they always save. And when you surrender half-heartedly, it is not a surrender at all. Then they meditate, but then meditation becomes an anxiety. And they come and they say that now this meditation is creating anxiety. We cannot sleep. I am constantly thinking about it, how it is going to happen, how I am to manage it. It is not a management. You cannot manage it. You have to be in a let go. A great let go. It is difficult for man. He is so disciplined for anxiety, so trained to be tense. From the very childhood, the society forces man to become man, aggressive, violent, always reaching for something, trying to achieve something ambitious. If they start playing with dolls, the parents say, why? What are you doing? Are you being sissy? This is for girls, not for boys. Home is for girls. To play with dolls is for girls, not for boys. They have to go out and fight their way into life. They have to struggle. That is for them. If home is for girls, then at-homeness will also be for girls. then you are never at home. And at homeness is meditation. Continuously, it seems to remain, draw upon it, and it serves you with ease. The feminine mystic, the valley spirit, the hollowness, continuously it seems to remain, it is always there. Draw upon it, and it serves you with ease, and it makes you total, and it fills you with ease at homeness. A relaxation comes to you. Look at existence not as a struggle, but as an enjoyment. Look at existence not as a war, conflict, but as a celebration. And infinite is the celebration. Infinite is the possibility of bliss, bliss upon bliss. Continuously it seems to remain. Draw upon it and it serves you with ease. Enough for today.